The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Here of late, these last few classes for doctrines, the class I'm teaching to the juniors and seniors this year at the college, we've been going through the Ten Commandments, studying through each commandment, and of course going through these every couple of years. Is it's always a really rewarding study, and my wife even brought out some fascinating points from the autobiography last night, which I hope to get into a little bit later for another program. Just showing how Herbert Armstrong, how he was early on, even before his conversion to the truth, when he was practicing as an advertising man, and trying to be successful and prosperous, yes, on the one hand, but also to go about it in an honest and upright way. There's numerous examples pointing this out in his own autobiography. And I alluded to that in today's class when we were studying through the Eighth Commandment, thou shalt not steal. And as we've brought out before with these particular commandments, to just think about how different the world would be if everywhere, people everywhere were obeying just one of these commandments. Just take one and think about how different the world would be if people actually obeyed it. Herbert Armstrong had this classic quote regarding the Ten Commandments. It's one of my favorites. It's in Mystery of the Ages on page 308, and he says, can you realize that every unhappiness, every evil that has come to humanity has been the result of transgressing God's law? That's what it boils down to. It all gets back to breaking the commandments of God, transgressing God's law. And then he says this, if no one ever had any other God before the true God, if all children were reared to honor, respect, and obey their parents, and all parents reared their children in God's ways, if no one ever allowed the spirit of murder to enter his heart, if there were no wars, no killing of humans by humans, if all marriages were kept happy and there were no transgressions of chastity before or after marriage, if all had so much concern for the good and welfare of others that no one would steal, and we could throw away all locks, keys, and safes, if everyone told the truth, if everyone's word was good, everyone were honest, if no one ever coveted what was not rightfully his, but had so much outgoing concern for the welfare of others that he really believed it's more blessed to give than to receive, what a happy world we would have. That's Herbert Armstrong writing in his book, Mystery of the Ages. That happy world is coming, and soon. It will soon be here. This wonderful world of tomorrow, the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like. What it will be like. That's the name of another publication or book that Mr. Armstrong wrote. And of course, he described that wonderful world that's coming in great detail. In that same book, though, he also gave us one final snapshot of the world we live in today. And it's not a pretty picture, is it? With respect to politics and government, Mr. Armstrong wrote, he said, too often what we find is selfish, greedy men of excessive vanity, ambitious in their lust for rule, scheming to get their hands on the throttle of power for personal aggrandizement and monetary gain. We find secret deals, graft, immorality, deception, dishonesty running rampant in high places. all kinds of secretive, corrupt dealings. Just yesterday in a forum, I went through this passage of Scripture in Ezekiel 28 where it describes that great archangel Lucifer, who was trained at the throne of God, his wings spreading across the throne of God, the anointed cherub, it says there in Ezekiel 28, the anointed cherub that covers, there he was right at the holy mountain of God, trained at the universe headquarters, one of just two anointed cherubs. All of this knowledge, this vast amount of knowledge, and then the tremendous wealth that surrounded him. The beauty. The Bible says he sealed up the sum. He was full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. But then what happened? Well, it goes on and says in that same passage, you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you. God found lawlessness in this being. Iniquity, lawlessness, and rebellion. And so he became very ugly and corrupt and evil. God said, I'll destroy you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. Your heart was lifted up. This is Ezekiel 28 and verse 17. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You have corrupted your wisdom by reason of your brightness. I will cast you to the ground. I will lay you before kings that they may behold you. That being now as Satan the devil, he influences and sways the affairs of men. He's broadcasting the great prince of the power of the air, it says in Ephesians 2. He broadcasts his attitudes and impulses of corruption and evil, all those things I just described to you from the World Tomorrow booklet, deception, dishonesty. Government officials grabbing the reins of power for their own purposes and vanity and their own monetary gain. We find secret deals, Mr. Armstrong said, immorality. Well, Satan the devil, as the god of this world, 2 Corinthians 4:4, he is the author of all of these types of corruption. Just yesterday, there were all these stories. I mean, you want to talk about a real Russian collusion scandal. One after another after another. For one, the Washington Post last night revealing that it was the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee that helped to fund the research that went into that dossier that attacked Donald Trump. All of those allegations, so many of them have since been proven false. And for the past year, I mean, Donald Trump supporters have been trying to figure out who funded this. Who funded this political hit job? That's what it turns out to be now. It says here from the Washington Post, Mark Elias, a lawyer representing the Clinton campaign and the DNC, retained Fusion GPS, a Washington firm, to conduct the research. After that, Fusion GPS hired dossier author Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence officer with ties to the FBI and the U.S. intelligence community, according to those people who spoke on condition of anonymity. Evidently, there's some kind of investigation in Congress that's getting close to the truth. And so here this information is leaked to the Washington Post, the leakers knowing that at least they'll get some kind of favorable coverage if it's leaked in the major media. And of course, you know that for the better part of this year, the major media has been sounding the alarm about the so-called Russian collusion, the collusion that the Trump campaign had with Russian officials, with the Russian government. And here all along, now we find out all along, this investigation, it's been funded by Mr. Trump's opponent, of course, Hillary Clinton, and the DNC. the Democratic National National Committee. So it's like the entire story has reversed itself. And we find out where the real collusion is. We find that from the far left, I mean, here they're guilty of the very thing they've been charging this past year. Just crazy. This is the world of politics. Too often we find selfish, greedy men of excessive vanity, ambitious in their lust for rule, scheming to get their hands on the throttle of power. Yes, indeed. Too often that's what we see. That's what we find. Here again, for those willing to dig just a little bit beyond the surface, they'll quickly find out where the real Russian scandal is. Here's another story from CNN just today. It says here, this is following an announcement by House Republicans yesterday. They announced a probe into the circumstances surrounding the sale of a uranium mining company to Russia's Atomic Energy Agency, Rosatom, I believe is how you pronounce it. This was approved by the Obama administration in 2010. So all of this happened during the Obama-Hillary Clinton years, when Hillary Clinton, of course, was Secretary of State. It says here the deal had to be approved by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, a committee that is composed of representatives from several U.S. government agencies, including the State Department, which at the time was led by Secretary Hillary Clinton. It says here, new questions have been raised by Republican lawmakers in light of reporting by The Hill that while the uranium deal was being reviewed and approved, the FBI was in the beginning stages of a racketeering and extortion investigation into a U.S. subsidiary of Rosatom. So it's kind of a complex, murky connection from one to the other. But you dig a little bit beneath the surface again, and you see some very disturbing connections. The Hill reporting raises questions, it says, about whether decision makers on the uranium deal, including members of Congress, were informed of the racketeering investigation that was ongoing. Further, it says, the Hill cites sources indicating that Russian nuclear officials routed millions of dollars to the U.S. that were designed to benefit the Clinton Foundation. At the same time, the deal was approved. So you may have heard of Peter Schweizer's book. I think it was in 2015 that he came out with that, Clinton Cash, talking about all this money that was funneled into the Clinton Foundation, and much of it coming while Hillary Clinton was serving as Secretary of State, dishing out all of these favors to these international corporations. I mean, I think the most damning chapter in that book has to do with this uranium deal, Uranium One. The story here from CNN says, The Hill does not indicate there's any evidence to show that Clinton was influenced by this, but it goes on to say the FBI criminal probe resulted in the sentencing of Vadim Mikhering, an executive at 10X, that's a subsidiary of Rosatom, to a 48-month prison sentence for conspiracy to commit money laundering. Now, this is someone, I've got another story here in just a second, that was given a visa to work in the United States back in 2009, early on in President Obama's tenure. And then he was approved later, even as he was under investigation by the FBI for all of these conspiracies. This racketeering, this money laundering, this was going on as they were happy, quite happy, not only to give him a visa in 2009, but to renew it in 2014, shortly before he was to be arrested. Well, this book, Peter Schweizer's book, going back to what he revealed in 2015, he talks about how that early on, well, even before President Obama came into power, that would have been 2009, Vladimir Putin really had his sights set on the world uranium market. He was doing everything he could at that time to try to grab control of the global uranium market. This is in Schweizer's book. page 40, he says, at the heart of the reset, you'll recall the reset, right? Coming in, I mean, relations between Russia and the United States were more and more strained there toward the end of George W. Bush's presidency. And then on comes President Obama, Barack Obama, and you'll remember Hillary Clinton, who went over to Russia with the big reset button. They didn't even say reset, but that's another story. But everything was going to be made better now. And it says here, at the heart of the reset, this is Peter Schweizer, at the heart of the reset was what Newsweek called a bevy of potential business deals. So they wanted to reset relations, and there were all kinds of business deals that were pending because of this. It says these included deals involving oil and natural gas, which are the backbone of the Russian economy. But not far behind were Kremlin ambitions to expand its share of the world nuclear market. Uranium, civilian nuclear power plants, and the technical services that supported them were considered a huge growth industry in Moscow, or for Moscow. He says here, again, this is Peter Schweizer's book, Clinton Cash. He says, finally, in 2006, the Kremlin had approved plans to spend $10 billion to increase Russia's annual uranium production by 600%. Putin considered the nuclear energy sector a priority branch for the country, which makes Russia a great power. It says, finally, Russia not only wanted to build nuclear plants around the world, it also wanted to control a large chunk of the global uranium market. So Putin wanted this control, and on comes Barack Obama, a new president who's willing, along with his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, to hit the reset button and reset everything. They did. I just want to take you through a short timeline. This is something, well, you can find quite a few of these out there online right now. But this is from the New York Times here again, just like the Washington Post, a friend of Hillary Clinton and the Obama administration. But this is a timeline of this deal, the Moscow's attempt or Putin's attempt, not an attempt. I mean, it was a flat out success to gain control of this global uranium market. It says here on the New York Times timeline, going back to September 2005, so this is a few years before Obama came into office, but a man by the name of Frank Giustra, he's a Canadian mining financier, he wins this major uranium deal in Kazakhstan for his Canadian company, UrAsia, and he gets this deal with this Kazakhstan company just days after he visited the country, along with former U.S. President Bill Clinton. So this was the beginning of a relationship that would continue for a number of years. And according to this New York Times timeline, in 2006, Mr. Giustra, the head of this Canadian corporation, he donated $31 million to the Clinton Foundation in 2006. $31 million. So you carry on then in the timeline up to 2007. February of 2007, UrAsia merges with the South African mining company and assumes the name Uranium One. So this is the name that you're seeing more often here recently in these revelations about this nefarious deal between Russia and Uranium One. And of course, how that Hillary Clinton basically gave her nod of approval. Even as her foundation, even as Bill Clinton's foundation was taking in millions of dollars of donations, this is all brought out in Schweizer's book, The Hot Air Timeline, a similar timeline to the New York Times, adds this little nugget to it. It says the head of Kazatomprom, that's Kazakhstan's state-owned uranium mining company, it says that the head has a private three-hour meeting with Bill Clinton at Clinton's New York home to discuss a forthcoming business deal arranged by Giustra. When asked about the meeting by the New York Times, Giustra denied it happened or that he arranged it. When it's pointed out that, well, this individual heading up Kazatomprom, has a photo with Mr. Clinton taken inside the home during the meeting. Giustra does an about-face. Similarly, a spokesman for Clinton initially denies the meeting took place, then issues a correction acknowledging that it did. So this is going on in early 2007. And then when you move forward to 2008, this referring back to the New York Times timeline, it says negotiations begin for an investment in Uranium One by the Russian Atomic Energy Agency, Rosatom. Here again, that's the Russia Atomic Energy Agency. It's state-controlled, basically, this company, trying to grab as much of the world or the global uranium market as possible. The Times says here, 2008 to 2010, Uranium One and former UrAsia investors make $8.6 million in donations to the Clinton Foundation. So the donations continue. Mr. Giustra donated $31 million himself in 2006. From 2008 to 2010, now we're into the Obama presidency, Uranium One, the investors for this company, $8 million in donations. I mean, they know. That if these deals go through, they're going to benefit from it as investors. And so they're quite happy to contribute to the Clinton Foundation. It says here, in June 2009, Rosatom subsidiary, ARMZ, takes a 17% ownership stake in Uranium One. So that's Russia, that's the Kremlin, that's Vladimir Putin acquiring 17% of Uranium One. And that's just in June of 2009, just a few months into the Obama administration. Now, let me refer you to another story that made the rounds just yesterday. This is from The Hill, John Solomon's piece at The Hill. And it says here, the Obama administration, this is about the visa that they gave to this Russian crook. It says, the Obama administration awarded a visa allowing a top Russian nuclear executive to enter the U.S. after the FBI had already gathered substantial evidence that he was involved in a racketeering scheme involving bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and money laundering, court records show. So they were discovering all of this about this individual, Vadim Mikhurin. Caught up in all of these kickbacks, extortion, bribery, money laundering, and such. And he easily gets a visa, a work visa, in the United States. He arrived, I think, in December of 2011. And then the Obama administration renewed his visa in August of 2014, as I said earlier, just a few months before he was arrested. And it talks about how that now that members of Congress are discovering all of this, it's raising questions again about what was going on during these years between the Obama administration and Russia, between Hillary Clinton and Vladimir Putin. It says the five-year delay between the time when the FBI first detected illegal conduct by Mikhurin in 2009 and when the Justice Department finally brought charges in 2014 has garnered new attention in recent weeks after The Hill reported details on the bribery case. It says during the five-year delay, the Obama administration approved the controversial sale of the uranium assets to Mikhurin's parent company, Rosatom, and also allowed billions in new contracts to be signed between 10X and American Utilities. And it goes on to say that Republican lawmakers, they want some answers. They want some answers. How is all of this connected? Why was this man let in? And why was his parent company given these kinds of contracts? And furthermore, why uranium? Well, going back to this New York Times timeline, 2010 to 2011, it says investors give millions more in donations to the Clinton Foundation. And this was, again, a crucial time period. Here, investors for Rosatom, they're contributing millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation, even at the same time that Hillary Clinton would perhaps be most responsible for deciding whether or not the United States government would approve of Rosatom's purchase of Uranium One. It's astounding. In June of 2010, They got majority ownership, and the U.S. government signed off on it. 51%. Rosatom owned 51% of Uranium One as of June 2010. That same month, you may have seen some reports along this, along these lines over the past few years, but more of them have resurfaced recently. That same month, June of 2010, former U.S. President Bill Clinton, he's paid $500,000 to give a one-hour speech in Moscow, sponsored by a Russian investment bank with ties to the Kremlin. And this is according to the New York Times. Ties to the Kremlin that assigned a buy rating to Uranium One stock. Here's a financial organization that is supportive of Uranium One stock, suggesting that people should buy. And former President Bill Clinton, he receives about twice his going rate for speeches, $500,000. That, as I say, was in June of 2010. Then you move along to October 2010, and that's when the U.S. government officially granted approval to the Russian government, basically, purchasing Rosatom, or at least a majority interest, 51%. And then you move along to January 2013. Rosatom, it says at the New York Times, takes full control of Uranium One and takes it private. Full control of Uranium One, this uranium company. And so here is the real Russian scandal. It's been there. It's been there for several years. As I said, Schweizer's book came out in 2015. And now there have been more revelations, even here in the last few days. It'll be interested to see if the major media is as intense, as obsessed about getting to the bottom of this Russian connection, when all the evidence now is pointing to the fact that these connections are to the Clinton Foundation, to Hillary Clinton, and even the Obama administration. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about human government. I mean, these stories don't exactly help you to have faith in human government, but that's okay. It's just like Mr. Armstrong says in the Wonderful World Tomorrow book. I mean, he does take one last snapshot of this present evil age and then goes on to describe in vivid detail the new government, the new world, the new civilization that's coming. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
It seems like every 4 years we have an article at thetrumpet.com about how much faith people put in political parties or political candidates. We've seen a pretty dramatic flip-flop in the last 4 and 8 years, going from President Obama, his re-election back in 2012, and then swinging to the other side. And both camps feeling like their man, like their leader, their candidate is the solution. And then you hear these wild statements coming from supporters that, well, now that we have the right government in there, all the problems will be solved. And of course, as we repeatedly point out at thetrumpet.com, the problems just get worse. They get worse. God's trying to get our attention. God's trying to humble us. Isaiah 2 and verse 17, notice this. It says, "And the loftiness of man shall be bowed down, and the haughtiness of men shall be made low, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day." You can only imagine there's quite a few. Well, I heard a few commentators just this morning in getting ready for the first segment. Almost gleeful that finally the truth is being told about the other side. And there's something to be said, obviously, for getting the truth out there, for exposing lies and falsehood. But neither side has the solution. Both sides are lofty. Both sides are guilty. Both sides get caught up in, as Mr. Armstrong described, the selfish, greedy, excessive vanity, the ambition for power or rule, the lust for rule, the scheming to get their hands on the throttle of power. It's just becoming routine. God says the lofty looks of men, they're about to be humbled. The haughtiness of men is about to come down. Men are about to bow down before the Lord. And thank God that the eternal, as Isaiah 1 and verse 11, or 2 and verse 11, the eternal God is about to be exalted. He alone shall be exalted. That's the government that we need to exalt. That's the leader, that's the ruler that we need to promote, that we need to get behind. That's the solution to all the problems of this world. If you go back into Isaiah 1, I mean, the prophet lists them out. All the sins of our nations today. Sinful nation, ah, sinful nation, he says. A people laden with iniquity. A seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. You see, who's the author of corruption in government? Children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. That's what's happened to our people, our nations. The United States, Great Britain, Little Judah, the other Western nations of Israel. We don't know who our owner, our master is. That's the only solution to our many problems, bringing God back into the center, bringing God right back into the middle of our family. Verse 5, it says, "Why should you be stricken anymore?" This is Isaiah 1. "Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick," it says. "The whole heart is faint. From the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. I mean, God says it's sick from head to toe. There's no soundness in it. He doesn't say half of it's sick. He says all of it's sick. It's not going to be solved by candidate A or candidate B. There's a sickness that's set in and curses that have come along with it. All of this lawlessness, all of this iniquity, it's leading to a societal breakdown. All of this racial strife and division, all of the economic problems. I went through that this morning in doctrines class. Just the amount of stealing that goes on routinely. Robbing, if nothing else, robbing from the future. Robbing from our children. Passing these massive bloated budgets. Spending hundreds of billions of dollars over budget every single year. And then coming out with these self-righteous announcements. Hey, we just passed a budget and it's fiscally responsible. Everything's going to be paid for with this budget. It's a conservative budget. Those are the kinds of things that you hear. Even as the deficits keep running up to, what is it, this past year, $660 billion? You remember back in 2008, 2009, when they were talking about $800 or $900 billion? At that time, they were saying, well, it has to be that much because we're right in the midst of a crisis. We need to borrow hundreds of billions to save ourselves. Well, we're not that far away from just doing $800-900 billion in a pretty good year, judging by what the Trump administration keeps saying. Stock market's booming. People are getting off food stamps. I mean, the economy's humming along. And Washington keeps spending and spending and spending and raising the debt limit. There is no debt limit. That's just a farce. It just keeps going higher and higher and higher. And then when debt limit discussion comes up, there's a little spat here and there, but inevitably, they'll blow the top off of the limit again and keep on spending. Lawlessness. You see, it's leading to a total breakdown. What would happen? Like I said this morning in class, just with that one commandment, don't steal. Don't steal from future generations. Don't steal from the other party. Don't steal from the wealthy or the middle class or the poor. Don't steal. Don't put in all these hidden taxes so people can't see it or detect it, so they won't know you're actually taking it. How different would it be if no one operated that way? Well, it'd be a different world for sure. And that's just with the obedience to one commandment. Look over at Isaiah 59. We've gone through this passage a number of times before. It's an excellent description of the world we live in today. Mr. Armstrong, in his book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, he talks about all of the modern forms of governments. Governments of men, formed by human beings, republics, monarchies, communism, socialism, all of these different types of government that man has tried. And as he says in the World Tomorrow book, I mean, they come along, these governments do, and they promise the world. They say they have all the solutions. And the corruption just intensifies. Isaiah 59 and verse 4, it says, none calls for justice, nor any pleads for truth. They trust in vanity and speak lies. They conceive mischief and bring forth iniquity. I mean, that's God's assessment. That's the way God sees human government today. I mean, you can talk about justice. You can talk about fairness. You can talk about eliminating corruption. But then look at you. Like I say, you scratch a little bit beneath the surface. I mean, there's entire books writing about the real Russian collusion. And now, I mean, it's so obvious, even the New York Times and the Washington Post are having to report about it. And I'm sure they're doing it with a fair bit of reluctance. Verse 7 says, their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity. Wasting and destruction are in their paths. Back before the flood, Genesis 6 brings this out. It says that the thoughts of men were on evil continually. And here Isaiah says that they're running to evil. They just can't get over to it fast enough. They can't sign these nefarious deals fast enough. They can't line their pockets with hundreds of millions of dollars fast enough. Verse 8, it says, the way of peace they know not, and there's no judgment in their goings. They've made them crooked paths. Whosoever goes therein shall not know peace. That's just the way it is with human governments. Mr. Armstrong in his book said governments promise peace, but they bring wars. They promise benefits for the people, and then they extract from the people the cost of the benefits plus excessive costs of government. Is that the world we live in today? He says government promises are empty. The people are the pawns who fork over the money in order to get a part of it back. We fail to find in human government any knowledge of life's purpose or dissemination of the true values. You don't find it anywhere. I mean, everyone says they want peace and things like that. In fact, you have diplomats circling the globe, working for peace. Presidents and prime ministers, they'll strive for it in the only way that they know. And yet, there's no peace. There's lots and lots of work. Vain work. Work that's done in vain. But the way of peace, they know not. If you want to know the way, you have to get into the Ten Commandments, like we're getting into in doctrines class. You have to study the Ten Commandments. You have to look into God's law to understand and know the way to peace. Man's ceaseless labor, his ceaseless striving for peace, it's not producing peace. Something's wrong. I mean, something's terribly wrong. And there's another prophecy in Jeremiah's writings where it says, when they cry out, peace, peace, you better know what's about to happen. You better know what's coming next. We cry out for peace even as we follow the way that causes war. That's the problem. We're not willing to go the way of peace, God's way to peace. The world's just completely upside down. We have it completely and totally upside down. And yet the talk is nonstop. The more we talk, though, the more war and violence and strife and bickering we see. Mr. Armstrong says this, when we take a hard, cold, realistic view of conditions and trends, they do point inevitably to a fast approaching world crisis of combined nuclear war, starvation, uncontrollable disease epidemics, crime and violence, and the extinction of human life on this planet. It's just as I described yesterday on the program. We went all the way through Matthew 24. I mean, see what Jesus has to say about this world and the end time prophecies that are to be fulfilled just before he returns to this earth. I mean, Isaiah 59, if you think about our study yesterday going through Matthew 24, that Olivet prophecy, Isaiah 59 is very similar to some of the things Jesus said to the disciples. They came to him and said, tell us, when will be the sign of your coming and the sign of the end of the age? And Jesus immediately said, look, there's going to be religious deception and war and conflict and famine and pestilence and earthquakes. And you better be ready. There's going to be an abomination of desolation, a spiritual one and a physical one. You're going to have to be ready to flee. And then when they say, lo, here is Christ, or here's God's work, you better not believe men. Because men will lie to you. Men will deceive you. Jesus went on to say, look, great tribulation is coming. Now, it also continues right on into the return of Christ and the establishment of God's kingdom. But then Christ says, you better watch. You better be ready. You better be found doing. You better support the right work. You better not say in your heart, my Lord delays is coming. You can go back and listen to that podcast again or hear it the first time if you didn't get to it yesterday. It's at thetrumpet.com. Nuclear Armageddon is at the very door. That's how close it is. In Isaiah here, Isaiah 59, it says, verse 10, we grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men. We're not getting anywhere. We're just stumbling around like we're blind and deaf and we're in darkness. In Mr. Armstrong's book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, he says, today, as in ancient times, too many of those who seek offices of power over the people of cities, states, districts, or nations promise great benefits, pose as public benefactors, while their inner motives are ambitions for personal power and wealth. You see, what was what we covered there in the first segment? What motivated all that? $500,000 speaking fees, $30, $40, $50 million in donations as a way to benefit the investors, as a way to influence decisions. What's behind it? Besides self-interest? Is there really an unselfish, outflowing concern for the good and welfare of all Americans or all of humanity? Everybody's in it for their own good. Everybody's in it for their own carnal self-interest. That has been man's legacy. What an utter failure we have made of civilization for 6,000 years, cut off from the tree of life. Cut off from God's Holy Spirit. We've rejected God's laws. We mock His commandments. We say things like Mr. Armstrong's successor said in 1992. Well, you know, the Ten Commandments are nice, but in actual fact, they really aren't that good. I mean, they wouldn't solve the problems of this world. Oh no? Well, what do you suggest? People have rejected God's law. People have rejected God's commandments. And no wonder the world is the way it is today. No wonder there's so much suffering and hatred and violence. No wonder there's so much sickness and poverty and disease. No wonder there's so much unhappiness and misery. This is not a pessimistic view. This is the world today. I mean, open your eyes, branch out from your tiny little neighborhood or your living room and look at the world as it is. Well, there's hope. You find it in that prophecy in Matthew 24. You find it right here in Isaiah 59. You read through to the end of the chapter here, Isaiah 59 and verse 1, it says, and the Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, says the Eternal, Jesus Christ shall come to Zion. It says here, verse 21, as for me, this is my covenant with them, says the Eternal, my spirit that is upon you, and my words which I have put in your mouth shall not depart out of your mouth, nor out of the mouth of your seed, nor out of the mouth of your seed's seed, says the Eternal, from henceforth and forever. That's talking about a great universal system of re-education. That's how we're going to solve the problems of this world. That education, of course, will be headed up by righteous government. To quote Mr. Armstrong, it says, "The only hope of justice, of peace, of truth, of right solutions to all this world's problems is the coming in power and glory of Christ to set up world government. Right government," he says, "the government of God." The government of God. That's what this world needs. That's what this world is about to get. That's what's coming, a restitution of all things. Look at Acts chapter 3. God's restored his government, his truth, to this church. Soon it's going to be restored to the whole world, to every nation on earth. You can keep right on reading into the next chapter, verse 1 of chapter 60. "Arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of the Eternal is risen upon you." See, in the short term, it's not going to get better. I mean, our immediate future actually is quite dark, pitch black, in fact. But there is a radiant, brilliant future ahead for all of mankind. It says in verse 2, "For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people, but the Lord shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you." I mean, this is that day star rising in our hearts today. And soon, I mean, the first fruits are going to be born right into the family of God. And then what a brilliant display all over this earth. The God family lighting up this earth with truth, illuminating the way of God, the way to peace. We're the light of the world. We're the light of the world tomorrow as well. The wonderful world tomorrow. It says in verse 3, "And the Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising." The people of this world, all peoples, in every nation, even the former kings and prime ministers, the leaders of this present evil world, they're going to come to the light of the God family. What a weighty responsibility God's children have resting on their shoulders. How important is our training? Are you prepared for it? Are you getting ready to rule alongside Jesus Christ, to assist Jesus Christ as the bride for all eternity? That's what's, that's what's holding this last bit up, if you could even put it that way. Prophecies, of course, are accelerating. But we're not going to arrive at the return of Jesus Christ until the bride, as Revelation 19 says, until the bride is ready to help and to assist Jesus Christ in bringing salvation to all the world. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Put the finishing touches here on yet another broadcast here on KPCG and KPCG.fm. If you'd like to comment on today's show or give us any general feedback, you can send emails to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.